Hello there. Welcome to On the Beat, the podcast that uncovers full frontal male nudity in cinema. My name is Laura, and I am joined by my unfortunately fully clothed co-host Ryan.
Hey. Oh, sorry. Wait, sorry.
Oh my God, what happened to you?
I'd fallen asleep because we were watching The Canyons.
Oh, well, spoiler alert, we are talking about the 2013 erotic thriller drama The Canyons in part three of 2022, Schrader-thon, Paul Schrader.
Yes, The Canyons.
My boy. My boy, Paul Schrader. The third one, we had a huge gap in full frontal films from Cat People in 1982 to 2013, The Canyons. Unless I'm missing something in between. If we did, we'll go back. But I don't think there was one in between.
No.
It was a bumpy ride in there.
Well, that's the thing. What The Canyons makes up for in its inclusion of male full frontal nudity, it does not make up for in terms of quality.
I really think you need to give it a break. You need to give it a bit of a break, tiny budget, crowdfunded, and I think there's some wonderful moments in this film.
Well, I think you've got a lot more to say about it than I do.
I am the researcher here, so I'm here to drop the knowledge.
Yeah.
Drop the tidbits.
There's a lot of very questionable things here, but I mean, I'm not going to, rip away at the story and how poor the acting is. And
how bad
a first impression the film gives when it's this kind of incredibly brightly lit bar scene with next to no music in it, and probably one of the most lifeless bar scenes I've ever seen in my life. And certainly, yeah, James Dean isn't winning any awards for... he's about as convincing as a Jehovah's Witness, as far as I'm concerned.
Let me throw out there the cast list, which we have Lindsay Lohan as Tara, James Dean as Christian, Nolan Funk as Ryan... And also Gus Van Sant is in this movie as a therapist.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's funsies.
He might as well just not be there.
He's a very classic looking white man. I just want to point that out. I never knew what he looked like before.
Let's put it this way. He's got a lot more to do in that small cameo he has in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, where he's just sitting in the background. Ben Affleck asks him, Gus, what do you want us to do in the scene? And he basically just counting his money. He's just like, I don't care.
What was the movie called?
It was Good Will Hunting 2, Hunting Season.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
I love that very much. Yeah, that's great. So the synopsis for this film is the discovery of an illicit love affair leads two young Angelinos on a violent, sexually charged tour through the dark side of human nature. I guess that's fine. Sure. It's kind of a weird thing. I mean, there's some jealousy and some moida.
The film kind
of... not the murder of the person I was expecting to get murdered, but that's...
By the time that happens, you're just kind of like, well, right, whatever. And then the way the film kind of starts itself out is effectively like this conversational... this melodrama, like this exchange of I guess, like relatively quite sordid and torrid sex games that this couple are into, where they effectively bring strangers into the bedroom and, for better or for worse, he's either fucking them or the couple are fucking each other and the guy's watching, or like there's a whole string of things kind of going around. So when
tons of Christmas kinks involved.
Pretty much, yeah. There's plenty of stuff to go on here. So effectively, as it starts, and the way I was kind of viewing it was, it feels a little bit like a poor man's sex lies and videotapes. I mean, it doesn't hold a candle to it whatsoever, but it kind of feels a little bit like that.
Okay.
That disappears very quickly. But overall, that is the very crux of like what we're presented to with their working relationship, is that there's effectively this control element when it comes to, I guess, these sex games that they play with each other.
Yeah, there's something about this guy that James Dean is playing where, yeah, he brings in other people into their relationship, and that's just something that they do. Apparently he loves her and she has love for him, but then that's just their kink together that I think is more on his side than hers, because he seems to be the one that organizes everything through his apps and whatnot. And he's just saying, oh, yeah, we're having people over. They're on their way.
Well, there's a power struggle. And there's obviously meant to be a sense of who's in control. And it's like, I hold all the money, because he's a trust fund baby. And he's like, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. It's
and like, then she thinks that she's the one that's in control. So it definitely goes back and forth. And I think that there's one section of the film in particular where she does try to, and successfully, you know, is able to get on top in a way.
Yeah. Just overall, like the whole idea of that just to me falls relatively quite flat. Like, just overall. Like, I don't find it interesting.
Okay, hold on a second. Let's just actually talk about the movie for a little bit before you just poo-poo all over the canyons.
Before I rip it yeah, to shreds.
You always do this. This is a fine
Why?
Movie.
Why am I not allowed to do this? This is
you
my
do it
opinion.
Every time.
No, I don't do it every time. Sometimes
what
we
movies
actually,
do you even like?
Well, sometimes we actually cover good movies for a fucking change. Instead, we're covering these pieces of fucking shit.
This is Traitorthon. Don't talk about
well,
my boy
try,
like that.
Don't try and bring up numbers and budgets and
crowdfunding
opportunities.
I am going to talk about budgets because it's interesting.
No, because you know what? People can make good things out of fundamentally nothing.
Do you want to know how this all came together in the first place?
Yeah, you know what? Enlighten me.
Okay, so Bret Easton Ellis and Paul Schrader were working with a producer, and they were involved in making a shark thriller called Bait, which I have a synopsis for that movie, and it sounds incredible, and it's going to make you upset because they didn't make this movie. But they made The Canyons instead. So this movie that they were meant to make called Bait, the synopsis is, it's basically a revenge movie about a disaffected kid, a sociopath who endures a kind of humiliation on the beach, and through a series of events, in a very cunning way, he ends up on a charter boat with kids who humiliated him, and then when they're in the open water, he pulls the ladder up, doesn't let them back in the boat, and chums the water.
Right, okay.
So that was the movie that they were going to make, the shark thriller. But the funding got pulled, and so they still wanted to work together. So they ended up being like, well, Ellis, write a script, and we'll figure it out. We'll do it really short, and we'll do it really cheap.
Right. So where's this Ellis guy from? Like, what's his
Bret Easton Ellis, everyone would probably know who he is best from American Psycho. He wrote American Psycho.
Is that just the script or is that the book?
The book.
That's the book.
I believe he had a hand in the screenwriting.
Okay.
And
well, that's that Mary Harron movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Christian Bale.
That's a pretty good movie.
No penises
it's
in that movie.
Decent movie.
Less Than Zero. He also wrote the book. Robert Downey Jr. is in that film.
Yeah, I've not seen that movie.
It's a good one.
Okay.
It's pretty good. I like his style. I've read a couple of his books.
Yeah, American Psycho is pretty fucked up, the book.
Chuck Palahniuk vibes, I think, in a weird way. Also like Paul Schrader, so.
Yeah, it's another one of those cis male movies.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. But the producer wanted to figure out how they could get this funded because they didn't have any involvement with big money. So he said they should do Kickstarter. So the film raised over $150,000. And I think Schrader, the producer, and Bret Easton Ellis all put in $30,000. Also, they put up for auction because Kickstarter, you can get stuff, right? And they can auction off things, you know, oh, if you donate this much money,
yeah, they have
you
separate,
can get this thing.
Yeah, you get separate tiers and incentives to basically give more money if you feel like you would like to. There's plenty of very successful Kickstarter projects that have been over the last, at least the last decade. So
yeah, well, they auctioned off, or Schrader auctioned off for $10,000 the money clip that Robert De Niro gave him on the set of Taxi Driver.
Okay.
Probably pretty cheap, as though they could have gotten more money for that.
Yeah, I'm just super surprised that someone as seasoned as Paul Schrader is literally giving away memories to fund the Canyons.
But well, anyway, he hadn't made a film in 5 years. The last one that he had made was Adam Resurrected with Jeff Goldblum. And okay. I think he had been having a hard time. He hadn't done a kind of big budget movie since that Dominion, the prequel to the Exorcist film.
Yeah, I guess the Dominion movie has its own story. I don't know if we're gonna go into that today, but it's certainly something that's certainly worth exploring.
It's very interesting, but because of the issues that arose from that film, he wasn't getting money to make films anymore. He wasn't getting hired. He wasn't getting these jobs. I think a lot of the things he was doing were foreign films, or foreign-backed films, at least. Okay.
Well,
so,
this
was his chance.
Yeah, well, I guess, like, coming into the 2010s, the landscape is changing quite a fair amount.
This film had a lot more kind of stories behind it, I feel. I feel like people were more interested in what was going on behind the scenes and the making of the film than the film itself. And I do believe that the issues surrounding Lindsay Lohan were part of the reason that the film didn't get a lot of promotion or even any acclaim whatsoever because of what was going on with Lindsay Lohan at the time.
I mean,
she was in and out of rehab.
Yeah, well, Lindsay Lohan was effectively blacklisted from the industry.
Yeah, this was also, not only was it Paul Schrader's chance to kind of get back on the map, but it was also Lindsay Lohan's chance.
Yeah.
She was having such a hard time.
Yeah, this was kind of a From the Ashes moment. Because, I mean, I don't know. I saw her in Herbie Fully Loaded.
Who didn't?
I mean, I guess.
I love Lindsay Lohan. I'm going to throw that out there. I think she's great. I had her album.
I think.
Mean Girls.
Yeah, I think she had a lot more.
Parent Trap.
I think she had a lot more to offer. Certainly in developing her career, then she didn't do herself any favors kind of fucking it up.
Wow.
But
her under the bus.
I mean, you have to look at it, you know, wholesale effectively.
Well, Schrader likened Lindsay Lohan to Marilyn Monroe in terms of being difficult. He said, tardiness, unpredictability, tantrums, absences, neediness, psychodrama. Yes, all of that, but something more like the thing that keeps you watching someone on screen, the thing you can't take your eyes off, that magic, that mystery, the thing that made John Huston say, I wonder why I put myself through all this, and then I go to the dailies.
Yeah, but that's Marilyn Monroe.
He said, Schrader said that Lindsay Lohan has more raw acting talent than Marilyn Monroe.
I mean, that might be true, but in terms of actual star power, I mean, Marilyn Monroe is all the way up there.
I think there's also just...
And also, I'll put this out there as well. Anyone who's ever seen John Huston's The Misfits, because that's exactly what he's talking about there, Marilyn Monroe can act.
Okay.
Yeah, she's amazing in that movie.
I think Lindsay Lohan did an amazing job in this film.
You are yet to convince me. I need you to continue on with this story behind the actual story.
There's a point where, in the beginning, kind of the pre-production, where they're getting the script together and they're doing readings, she canceled on an appointment to go over the script with Schrader and James Dean. And then she rescheduled for the next day, like, oh, so sorry, I'll be there the next day. But she never showed up, and they fired her. Because they basically held all the cards before production started, right? So they're saying, we've got someone in Paris, we've got them on the phone, ready to take over your role if you fuck this up. And she kept messing it up. So they fired her. She went to the hotel where Schrader was staying and knocked on every single door on his floor to find out where he was. And she is crying and causing a scene. The front desk said, we will call the cops if you want us to. And Schrader said, no, no, no. He texted her, Lindsay, go away. He just texted her while she cried outside of his door for an hour and a half.
Okay.
They ended up giving her another chance. But as soon as that happened and production started, then she was the one holding all the cards. So then she started acting out. I don't think it was as terrible as they say. She said, or it seemed as though she would show up late sometimes. Sometimes she would disappear. But it wasn't as bad. They were still, weirdly enough, on schedule the whole time.
Right.
They never, like, they never went over their budget. Their very small budget. They were always on time. They were always on track the whole time.
Right. Okay.
Despite all of her issues and her tardiness.
Okay. Okay. I'm continuing to listen.
I don't know. I mean, that's all I have. That's all I, well, I'm sure I have more, but I just think it was interesting. I think it's fun.
Okay.
It's fun, the story behind the film.
None of that stuff translates to making it better. This is a bad movie with a handful of interesting little bits in it.
Yeah, maybe.
And I mean a tiny hand.
I mean, this isn't going to blow anyone's mind.
No, I mean, it's not going to.
I think I give it a little bit more credit for the pressure and the budget and the things that they were able to do with that small amount of money.
Yeah, but I think that's the story of every film. There is pressure, there's problems, there's issues. Sometimes you only have half an hour to shoot a scene that's maybe like 15 pages long. You know, that happened to David Fincher on Seven for that whole end sequence when they're out on the, they're out near the telephone pylons.
For Magic Hour?
Yeah, they had to get it in Magic Hour and they only had so much. He had to start trimming shots because all of the things that he wanted to do, he couldn't do. And that's remarkably one of the best scenes, probably the best scene of that movie. So there are things that can come out of what effectively could become a complete disaster. I think that's the main thing is like this film, because we've been watching Schrader stuff. We've been doing that, but at the same time, you watch this, and you go,
This is different than any of the films that he's done before, and I think that in and of itself warrants a little bit of leniency. I think it deserves a little bit of leniency and care.
That's fine. I think you're more than able to defend it. But the thing is, like, I mean, I feel like there's some very good reasons as to why this film just gets ripped apart. Because, look, end of the day, filmmaking in itself can be a very unrewarding process. You can put everything into it, and then if what you make at the end of it can be summed up as just being a big pile of steaming shite, that's unfortunate. Like, that's just the way it goes. Like, that's how the pendulum swings sometimes.
Okay.
I guess, like, I mean, let's just get into the meat and bones of it. Like, what's the tagline of this movie?
The tagline is, and it doesn't make any sense to me because I'm not from California, but it's not the hills.
Well, it's not the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah, it's the canyons.
It's the canyons. So it's basically, like, geographically, this isn't the Hollywood Hills, this is the canyons. And there's a lot of stuff at the beginning of the movie where basically it's, I don't know where it would be, but it's like all the disused buildings, all the abandoned buildings, abandoned like cinemas and things. Like basically all of the, I guess all of the stuff that would make LA feel like classic LA, that's all completely dead and disused and not used anymore.
Yeah.
And this is effectively a film about the film industry. It's not a very good film about the film industry, but it does cover, I guess, this kind of middle tier, low tier kind of budget movies that are made and kind of, you know, funded by this guy who's just a millionaire. And it's the jive-in, it's the, you know, I'm working in a coffee shop, I'm doing bar shifts, I'm also an actor. It's,
yeah.
To a lot of degrees, it's incredibly cliche, and it feels a little bit, certainly the characters themselves feels a little bit two-dimensional. I will say, Lindsay Lohan does better than most.
Yeah, she does.
All the rest of them, though, I mean, even James Dean, I was just kind of like, all right. here we go. Let's see what this guy does.
Yeah, there's moments where he is quite imposing and he has a very scary look about him.
Yeah.
But then there's other times where it's not great. That opening scene that you were talking about,
yes,
where it's kind of devoid of music, it's quite quiet.
It's very
and they're all
quiet.
Just sitting around. There's weird close-up shots of their face while they're talking and you're trying to figure out who these characters are.
Yeah.
They wanted to reshoot that. But then they knew that once they wrapped, they couldn't get Lindsay Lohan back. It was just going to be totally impossible. So they just tried to make it work with what they had. They didn't like her makeup. They thought it was a weird scene. Wasn't going well together. It is the only scene that I feel like throughout the film doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all.
No.
It doesn't work at all.
And that's your
it doesn't
opening
help. It
scene.
Doesn't, yeah.
That's the first scene that they shot. Of the whole thing,
if
I think
it fucking feels and looks like it.
No,
it's insane.
I agree. Because
it's
people don't look like they know each other at all.
This is a horrible, and this is going to be like a damning indictment, but you remember that Talking Cat movie that we watched?
Yeah.
It looks like that movie.
The sound was slightly better in this film.
Sound is slightly better in this film.
Cat movie.
But I'm thinking, this is a film that it looks incredibly underwhelming. There are some things about it that do get better, but it just immediately looks underwhelming the minute it starts.
Okay. Now moving on to other parts of the film.
What,
you're going to keep doing this. I know you are.
And you know exactly what I'm going to be
doing.
I'm
going to say something interesting and go, well, you know, Laura, it looked a little dull.
No, that's okay. I wrote something down.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What was it?
So there's a lot of, like, they blow out the highlights. They do a lot of, like, Robbie Richardson stuff where they blow out the highlights so the whites are all really bright.
Okay.
And in some cases, like, that works really well, like in, I don't know, JFK, right? It works really well and it looks quite nice. But for the most part, it just feels, like, visually deprived and unadventurous.
The visuals, I was less concerned with and more concerned about
the story.
Yeah.
For something that's made by one who's effectively like Paul Schrader, celebrated screenwriter, film critic.
Well, he didn't write this.
Doesn't matter. He still has a hand in trying to craft this story. And then obviously Ellis, who's a fucking novelist.
Yeah.
Who's made some of the most celebrated modern books of all time.
Yeah.
And this is what they come out with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't blame the actors in this, even though it does feel like, I was going to say this, but like I do like The Room, but it's just, I kept on being reminded of...
Amateur actors?
Just amateur hour, man. Amateur hour. And the only reason that fucking James Dean guy is in this movie is because he can get his dick out and he doesn't fucking ask any questions. Like, that's the only reason he's here.
Yeah, he was very professional. Bret Easton Ellis was the one who was pushing James Dean. Schrader didn't want him. He thought that he wouldn't be able to get out of his porn mind and actually do some real acting. But it took a few times and it took some screen tests and then they thought, okay, this might work. And I guess Lohan and James Dean had a mild amount of chemistry.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
And he was a good boy on set. I mean, he was always on time.
That's all I heard about this movie. There are some Schrader antics that did happen on the set, like trying to obviously convince Lohan that like everything was going to be okay. Certainly when they shoot that kind of more prominent sex scene near the...
Oh my gosh, I want to talk about that. One of the first dick scenes happen really early on in the film. There's two of them. And the first one is 13 minutes and 36 seconds, and it's right after that awkward dinner at the bar or whatever that they have, and James Dean invites a dude over, and I assume he was inviting him over just to watch him and Lindsay Lohan have sex.
It looks that way. I mean, as it kind of transpires, that's exactly what he's there to do. I mean, I don't know why you seem to think like that first scene's the most awkward, because the awkwardness just continues.
I think they get more comfortable as time goes on, but that first scene is just the weirdest one.
It's
this one's fine. I'm not going to cut this every single scene and say this one's awkward, this one's not awkward. This one was fine.
I mean, he's this guy, this random dude just fucking shows up.
Yeah.
And
they're like, oh, have a tequila shot. Those guys in that house have the same cups that we have. They're from IKEA.
Yeah, that's obviously, I mean,
those,
you know.
What do you call them? Tumblers? I don't know what kind of cups those are.
No, they're whiskey glasses.
Whiskey glasses?
Yeah, they're whiskey glasses. I mean, yeah. I mean, like, there has to...
They have our cups.
They have, yeah, they have our cups. Didn't we feel privileged? But, I mean, we...
feel fancy.
Yeah, of course we were. It's like, wow, look at that guy drinking from the same cup that we own.
Wow. It's like we're in the movies.
Wow, I couldn't believe, yeah, of course, I would feel, oh yeah, I don't know.
Guy comes over and James Dean tells him to get comfortable, so this guy just takes his pants off.
Well, I guess that's what he was meaning.
I know. It's just kind of funny. I mean, you know why he's there. He was invited over for a very specific reason.
Well, luckily at this point, James Dean leaves his pants on for the most part. We never have to see his shit for not at least for a little
another,
while.
Another hour almost.
Yeah, pretty much. But, I mean, Lohan's almost completely naked.
Yeah.
Like, at this point. So, I guess, like, if you were ever curious as to what Lindsay Lohan did look like naked, I mean, this is the movie, effectively.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is it. Like, everything is bared. Bared all.
She's naked for, topless for a decent amount of this film.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, does it add anything to it? I don't know. Contextually, it's there.
Nope, it's just one of those things where I can appreciate people just being people. You being naked for a certain amount of time in the day, and then you're clothed for a certain amount of time in the day. And I can appreciate that being in a film.
Yeah.
You're naked when you're meant to be, and you're clothed when you're not.
Well, the thing that I didn't really appreciate is that the guy gets comfortable, so he takes his clothes off, and then he's immediately completely naked. And this is obviously when we see his bits and bobs. And
we
it's
do.
A full wide shot. We see everything.
A couple of times, I think it cuts back and forth to Lohan and Dean on the couch making out, and then this guy jerking off. Well, we don't see him masturbating, but apparently there's a moment that was cut out of the film of him just unsimulated, obviously, masturbating on a leather chair.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, bare ass?
Yeah.
Gross.
Like, I mean, if you're getting excited, you're probably going to get a little bit sweaty. So that chair is going to get a little bit gross.
You know what I couldn't help think about is that they rented this location from somebody for $10,000 for the shoot. And I was just thinking about all those bare butts and balls all over their leather furniture.
It might have been a porn house, Laura. Like, they might.
I know, it wasn't a porn house.
Was it not a porn house?
No, it was not. And I just think about all the things they needed to wipe down.
I mean, there's probably a Febreze.
I hope they spent $5,000 cleaning it.
There was probably a Febreze budget. I mean, there would probably have to be. Yeah.
But in the uncensored cut, there is that scene.
Wow.
That they took out, which is not streaming on Showtime right now.
They removed some of the magic.
They did.
Yeah. Look
at
that.
You see everything.
Yeah, no. I mean, you can see him jacking off. Like, he's just fucking going for it. And then, obviously, you know.
Good for him.
And then, yeah, like, James Dean's going down on fucking Lindsay Lohan. And it's all kicking off.
It's
and then,
really going on.
Thankfully, it cuts away. And,
it's just a regular Tuesday night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm really struggling to figure out what the fuck really happens in this movie and what the fuck it's all about.
Oh my gosh, calm
what's,
down.
What's
There's
even
a
the
love
point?
Triangle here between Lohan, the actor Ryan, and James Dean.
Well,
and James Dean's getting jealous.
Here's my note.
That she has a past relationship with this other man.
Yeah, well, his fucking character arc is astounding.
Who?
James Dean.
Okay.
And that was sarcasm. But basically, I wrote down, I said, everyone's cheating on everyone, basically. Everyone's
well,
fucking somebody else.
It bothered me because they have this type of relationship where it is an open relationship, but in classic man fashion, it's only open for the man and not for the woman because the woman is his.
Uh-huh.
It's his property. So she can't be seeing somebody else.
Yeah.
It's crap.
But she is seeing somebody else.
She is seeing somebody else, but so is he.
Yeah.
So is James Dean. He's
seen a guy who's unfortunately called Ryan.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do a drinking game to this, just have a drink every time they say Ryan.
It is often.
And it happens every so often.
Every so Ryan.
Yes. And make sure that drink that you're drinking is pure methanol. Because you'll want to go blind. But the thing is like... I'm just trying to figure... You know what? There's the only bit that I remember that I was just like, what the fuck's going on here? Text TV.
Yeah.
Text TV. Fuck is text TV?
You think about it now. So this is 2013, and you think about how often in films now you have text bubbles popping up on the screen to show us what our characters are saying on their phone.
Well, I remember
But back then,
yeah,
they had to figure out another way, I suppose.
Well, I remember watching, the guy who did film analysis and stuff on Vimeo. I can't remember his name. But basically, because of the advent of cell phones and because of their prevalent use and everything, like, it's changed the landscape of film narrative, specifically for like horror movies and stuff like that. Like, that's okay. That's why I think like Scream is the very, very last movie which works, just because there's not really any cell phones in it. Like, that's the thing. And it's very much predicated upon like the use of the telephone, and
because you can't cut the phone line on a cell phone.
Pretty much. And I remember I've seen a bunch of films that just do not hit the mark, where it's basically like, well, we just have to kill the internet, and then that's that plot point sorted, and it never really works.
Right.
And I guess like the issue with this.
Oh no, my phone died.
Pretty much it's like, oh no, the router's,
oh no, I'm not getting
the router's restarting, like no one can help me. I mean, it's like, you know, like what they were trying to explain was like, look, now storytellers are having an issue where it's like, how the fuck do I show this stuff on a phone?
Do you remember in the first Scream, and the phone lines are cut, and then she runs over to her computer and then types in 911, tries to get the cops on the internet?
Wow, that's pretty clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, this dies dial-up back then, though.
I think it was. Boyfriend's climbing in the window. Trouble. Okay, yeah. Sorry, go on.
But basically, like, there's this issue of just, like, how the fuck do you show what's on a cell phone without just effectively just shooting the front of a cell phone, which is, like, easily the most uncinematic thing ever. And there's obviously people that are filmmakers that have found a way of just, like, well, we'll just have little text bubble things like popping out of the phone, which also kind of work, and for the most part don't really work, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a visual medium. You don't want to be sitting there just reading text messages going like popping off on one another between two characters, because it's just not very interesting.
Right.
And I guess what they try to do in the canyons is, why show it off the phone or do anything in After Effects? Just use this thing called text TV, where the text just show up on the TV.
Yeah, but then obviously you're still typing it into your phone and looking at your phone.
And then looking back at the TV. It was eye-opening.
It was odd, and I loved it.
This is also one of the moments in the movie I genuinely thought was all right. Because it was dumb.
I really, and just thinking about how these two people are living together in a house, and she's upstairs in an oversized shirt, playing on her phone, looking at text TV, and then she goes to tell her boyfriend that she's leaving, and he's just laying on the couch, just downstairs. They're just in different rooms, not talking to each other. The house is silent. They're just chilling.
I mean, to some people, that's life. I mean, he's...
That's weird.
He was looking at his iPad. Or at least, like, what he was acting doing. He was... It looked like a fucking iPad. But he was like this, and his eyes are scanning up and down. Just on the really, web. Really, really fast. Very, worldwide web. Very strange. I don't think James Dean's a very good physical actor. And again, there's more silly shit that happens that precedes all this as well. And it's like the guy checks her phone, and then her phone. That whole thing with the phone that happens, where it's like, I don't know if this is my phone.
I love that he takes her phone, Jesus, and she goes Christ. Away. And while she's away, James Dean has his hacker friend come over to hack her phone.
Fucking guy.
Hack her Facebook to also hack her friend/ old lover Ryan's Facebook to see if they're friends on Facebook.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if I could do this. I mean, has anyone hammered down on the down key for whatever reason?
And then you're looking at the screen
and you're like, it's not moving.
This guy's a genuine hacker, though. And he was like, hacking away.
Let's say like 20 seconds. Let's just all you hear. And he's like, no, no, wait. And the thing has moved. It's like, no, no, that's the same picture we've been staring at for the last like 10 seconds.
Yeah, the page hasn't moved. And then he finally looks up and realizes, oh, yeah, this is what I was looking for. It's a picture of my girlfriend with this guy.
Yeah, who they'd already had a relationship together as well.
So why would it matter if they were on Facebook?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then he goes, hey, I think I figured out those deleted texts you wanted me to see.
Oh, God.
And then the texts pop up. I swear I thought it was going to go on text TV. And it just says, I think he knows about us. Loved
yes.
it. And then James Dean says to the hacker friend, he goes, how quickly can you hack into his bank account?
Yeah.
Which comes to nothing.
It does come to nothing. It basically is just like Ryan has no money at one point in the movie.
Yeah. I barely could hack into this Facebook account. What do you think? He's I'm going to hack into a bank?
He's like, fuck you, Christian. You've taken away my money. I'm angry. And it's like, what the fuck?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I'm just realizing something.
What?
When Ryan comes out of that Amoeba record store and he goes to the ATM, he doesn't have any money. Maybe it did come to something. I just thought it was because he was poor. Maybe he hacked him.
Are you kidding me on?
He gave him a hack.
Are you honestly not able to like put two and two together?
Did you remember that?
That's one of the few things in the film I understood.
2 seconds ago, I said it came to nothing and then you agreed with me.
No, no, no. I think I'm just a little bit delirious because we both sat down and watched the canyons.
You just napped through canyons.
No, we've got his hacker friend to wipe his bank account, and then he's like,
of the $23.98 he had in his bank account, he's already pouring out a poor man.
It's like, fuck, I can't afford my CDs. It's like, what the, like, who cares? Like, who cares? Like, what was the whole point of that
whole moment?
I would
be very upset if I went to the store and I couldn't buy my CDs. It's tragic.
It's all quite convoluted and messy.
Well.
Where the hell are we?
Penis scene part two, which is the craziest part of this movie.
The group sex.
The group sex at 1 hour, 5 minutes, and 26 seconds. This was in the contract for the actors that there would be a four-way sex scene. This was a non-negotiable scene.
And that's the thing. Even like it looks like shit as well.
The lights that they used look like they came out of a seventh grader's bedroom.
It's so bad. And this isn't the worst
part, though. Who puts on lasers? You're not going to get a boner. You're going to have an epileptic fit.
If only.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky. Well, here's the thing. Like, up to this point, there's all this collusion and like there's this other girl called Cynthia. Everyone's spreading rumors about everybody else. And for whatever fucking reason, it's about this alien movie that they're fucking making. The producer on that movie is also gay. Someone's going to suck whose dick. And it's all this nonsense, right?
So much
espionage. All this crazy espionage. Fucking hell. Yeah, Jack Ryan shows up and then everything's fine. But then there's this four-way sex scene thing, and they're all, like, you know, Lohan and Dean are arguing because it's like, who's talking to who? I was speaking to this person, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, these people are going to come over because it's going to be another one of those sex game things. And they're like, well, I can cancel it if you want. And it's like, no, just invite them over. And it's like, okay,
tell them to meet me upstairs.
I'll be upstairs. And then, well, I think they want to use the pool first. It's like, I don't give a fuck. It's like, all right, okay.
So she's chilling upstairs in her undies.
Yeah,
and these guys come out of the pool, but they walk. I mean, obviously they're skinny dipping. Why not? It's a sex party.
Right.
And yeah, James Dean and this other guy. I don't think you see the other guy naked, but you 100% see James Dean naked.
Well, that other guy, as far as I'm aware, no idea who he is. He's just referred to as the hot guy. This is the only film he's ever been in.
They're porn actors, those two.
Well, the lady had some credits that I saw. The guy.
Sexy credits?
No idea. Well, the thing is, if you go on Letterboxd and you look at like James Dean's credits and also this lady, whatever her fucking name is, Letterboxd does that thing where it shows you like the posters in like a square grid. And obviously the ones for the porn, they're all pixelated out. So you know they're porn. That's the same way I found out that the original director of Evil Dead Trap, which funnily enough, there's a HD 4K transfer now available on Amazon. So if you like your horrible video nasty horrors, that's definitely on there and is definitely worth a watch. He also did like a bunch of porno before he did like movies like that, because they're all fucking sordid. And if you've ever seen any of that stuff, it's all kind of just like it's gross. But yeah, no, that's how you figure out if they've been in porn, is that Letterboxd will not show you the covers to those.
Well, they're, you know, credited, to those
posters.
You know, films. Good for them.
Yay for cinema. But anyway.
Yeah, this scene is really interesting because you are back kind of entwined in this power struggle between James Dean, Christian, and Lindsay Lohan, Tara. And she had just come from his ex-girlfriend's house saying, you know, I know how to handle him. Looks like you didn't have him under control. I have him under control.
Collusion. So yeah.
She's obviously coming into this situation. He thinks that he has the upper hand by bringing these people in to have sex with them. And she's thinking, absolutely not. So while this whole thing is happening, she is trying to kind of control the whole situation, right? So we got the four of them in bed. There's lasers going off. Everyone's getting sexy.
These fucking lasers.
What does he say to them? He's like, I want my girls to kiss. Come on, I want to see my girls kiss.
Yeah.
Some weird, gross stuff.
Yeah. Because it's also like for whatever reason during the scene, they weren't able to get them to say the lines or to record the lines.
Yes.
The way they wanted them to. So you never see anyone's lip move, and it's painfully obvious that they've recorded the lines afterwards.
Yes.
And I'm assuming there's a technical reason for that, for why that came to be. And you could say, it's a stylistic choice, it's Paul Schrader, just live with it. It's like, right, okay.
Well, during this scene,
all the dick stuff basically is it happens up to the point where they start this four-way sex scene.
Right.
Let's be clear. Like, they're just walking up and he's like...
Yeah, they walk up the stairs into the four-way situation that I was describing.
Yeah.
So, again, every penis shot in this movie is full-on, wide shot, long takes, wieners.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, you are seeing everything. And, you know, everyone knows James Dean as a porn actor for having supposedly a nice... charismatic attitude and a gigantic wiener. You know what's weird? I was reading an article where I think it was one of the writers for Vanity Fair said that James Dean came up to her while they were kind of doing the scene and he goes, it's not really that big.
Okay.
Just so awkward.
Yeah. I mean,
when you can see it, it's, you know, it has heft.
I mean, to be fair, who really gives a fuck?
I'm just saying, I mean,
it's attached to
him.
I don't
typically talk about way penises look or, you know, it is what it is and I'm happy that they're there. We did
the same thing with the Simon Rex, you know, the Red Rocket movie, you know. But he seems like a pretty good guy, Simon Rex.
Yeah.
But anyway, they do this four-way sex scene and then Lindsay Lohan takes control.
Yes, she does. She has him do some sexy stuff.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like it.
No. I've got some things to say about that. That's when I fucking lost the plot. But yeah.
What do you mean?
So,
would you want me to say what happens?
In what would you mean?
In this four-way scene, how
Lindsay Lohan forces the other dude to kiss James Dean, and they start like making out properly, and then forces the other dude to fucking suck his dick.
Yeah, she makes this guy go down on her boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's not happy.
Well, I guess, like, here's the thing, like, with that scene, is, like, that scene can go any which way. Could end up with the women in a very compromised situation with, like, these two other dudes in the room. Like, I mean, it ends up turning into, like, a nightmare scenario or any of those sorts of things where it just ends up going a little bit too far. Like, I can understand what she's trying to do. And she's trying to just kind of play mind games with this cunt. But at the same time, it looks really bad. You're not really 100% sure if that's what's happening, because what you're hearing is just the dialogue that's been overlaid on the top. No,
you know what's happening.
And you're kind of just like, right, okay, well, here it is. And then, all right, well, he's sucking his dick. The thing that kind of pissed me off, and this is the thing that's like, that's the dick scene, by the way. There you go.
That's the second dick scene.
And thankfully, the last one. But, the thing that really fucking pissed me off is the scene with Gus Van Sant, who plays the therapist. He doesn't need to be there. Gus doesn't need to be there. He doesn't need to be associated with this whatsoever, right? But he's talking to James Dean, and James Dean goes on this fucking rant about the sex scene that just happened, where he's like, I felt objectified, he didn't feel like he was in control. Basically, he is referring to us all of the stuff that we already figured out from watching the fucking thing anyway. It's all exposition at this point. And he's just fucking battering on, saying that, saying he's objectified. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, cut this out. Should have cut out the first scene, should cut this scene out as well. Okay. I'm like, I'm really sorry you felt objectified.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why that scene is there. They kept talking about his therapist, and then I don't know if it was necessary to show your therapist.
No, well, there. The scene itself doesn't bring anything to the table, you know? It's just another one of those quite overly bright scenes where you're just like, oh, and then it's like, oh, there's Gus Van Sant.
It was nice to see a different location.
It was nice to see a different, yeah, I mean, I guess so.
That library?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, as the film progresses, the cinematography gets better.
Oh.
I don't know why I seen that. That's something I kind of realized. I was just like, oh, look, that looks a little bit nicer. You know, oh, there's a nice use of color there, whatever. All
so
right,
Lindsay
okay.
Lohan was apparently being difficult during this four-way scene. And obviously, as I was saying, it was in her contract. She has to do it. So Schrader's yelling at her, it's in your contract. You have to do this. She's hiding in a closet with a friend of hers, and they're just drinking. And she's just like, she was in there for an hour.
Right.
And Schrader's freaking out.
Okay.
Then she comes out of the room. She's laying on the bed. She's just laying there and won't take her robe off. And Schrader's losing his mind. So he's trying to figure out what to do. The light's about to come up because they were filming at night and she's taken the piss. And so he decides that he's going to take all of his clothes off because maybe that'll make her feel comfortable. So he just goes, hey, Linz. She looks over and he's dropped trow. And she's like laughing, going, oh my God, Paul. And she's like, eh, why not? Takes off all of her clothes. She wanted everyone to take off all their clothes, but then they just had more of the crew leave to not have to deal with this situation.
Yeah, I don't think at any point I'd be like, I'll satiate her fucking desires, this drama queen.
Well, they ended up being able to do that scene in one 14-minute take. And there was that moment that was actually in that scene, which is very alarming to watch. And they actually closed the movie with a similar thing where she just stares straight down into the barrel of the camera and smiles.
Yeah, that was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie. But then when you think about the nature of how, I guess, like Schrader was able to get that scene in the can, that's her just staring down, giving him a big fuck you, probably, for
giving
the most
her a
part.
Little winky wink.
Yeah, so she's definitely playing it up. She's playing up to the camera a fair amount with that sort of thing. And yeah, they do. Yeah, you're right. They do. They reflect the same thing, like, directly at the end. It's just not, it's not as effective. It's kind of just like, ooh. But yeah, at least that one moment, I was like, that's pretty, that's all right, actually. Like, that's actually pretty decent. That was effective.
Yeah.
But whether it was intentional or not, I don't know.
Yeah, he could have cut it out, but he didn't. And I think that it is pretty cool.
No. Well, he needed to get some flourishes in there because this film is dangerously lacking them. Yeah.
There's this other scene that I really, really like, and it is the last scene that I actually really like. Lindsay Lohan finds out that James Dean had her phone. She starts to panic, and he freaks out because he knows that she's been sleeping with this other guy, right? After all this, his espionage and his hacker friend going through her phone and her Facebook. And he starts screaming at her and throws her into a wall and then throws her into that side table. She is, like, sobbing. It is super scary.
It felt a little bit too real, personally. Felt like it was actually, it was kind of grounded a little bit more in reality than I would have appreciated personally. Well, it
was filmed towards the end of the whole shoot, and so I'm sure that everyone was really annoyed with her, in a way. And
probably not to the point where you'd want to force physical harm on her.
So what was interesting about this scene is that apparently during rehearsals, just any typical rehearsal, Lohan wanted to give it everything. So she wanted it to be as good as she could get it, give it her all. But then when they were trying to rehearse this particular scene, James Dean was doing it at like a half speed. And so Schrader was kind of trying to coach him, oh, this is how I want it. And he wasn't really getting it. So Schrader takes Lohan and just like slams her on the ground. And Lindsay gets up and she goes, that was great. That was perfect. Do you want to do it again? And he's like, no, I think that's okay. But they ended up being able to really kind of get it when they filmed it, perhaps due to Schrader slamming her on the ground and James Dean going, okay, well, I can handle her a little bit rougher than I was expecting to.
Right.
Because she was fine with it. And there's this weird thing where after they actually filmed it and someone came up to her and complimented her on the scene, and she goes, well, I've got a lot of experience with that from my dad. Isn't that sad? She's got a bad dad. Yeah, it is tragic.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff being channeled through this film.
Oh, yeah.
None of it for the better.
No.
Yeah.
Perhaps not.
Aye. It's like, when does art go a bit too far? Canyons. Well, the movie does end. I mean, it's only an hour and a half long. It feels so long.
It does. So Ellis boring. Said the same thing.
Yeah, it's so boring. But yeah, there's a murder. We won't spoil that. We can just kind of move on to our little last bits and bobs. Like, there's not much to kind of add to the movie because I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, you've spent an hour listening to this. I'm sure you have an extra 30 minutes of your life. Just pop in and watch this movie too.
Yeah, 30 minutes of your life that you'll never get back. And you can just do that.
So apparently everyone was arguing about the final cut of the film. And Schrader went and showed Steven Soderbergh the rough cut. And Soderbergh, yeah. Did you like that? You're going to like this.
Why the fuck is he showing it to Soderbergh?
I don't know, maybe they're best friends.
Of all people. I mean, were they arguing so hard about the movie? It was just like, Paul, where's all the good bits?
Yeah. Then Soderbergh has the rough cut and says to Schrader that he'll cut it. He'll recut the movie for him in 3 days. And then Schrader said no. And then he told the New York Times, he goes, the idea of 72 hours is a joke. It would take him 72 hours to look at the footage. And you know what Soderbergh would do if another director offered to cut his film? And he put up his two middle fingers. And he's like, that's what Soderbergh would do. Basically, fuck you. You're going to cut my film. And so he was pissed. He was pissed that Soderbergh would offer to do that.
Why was Soderbergh offering to cut the film? Did he have any sort of obligation to do that for him?
No, he had no obligation to do that. I think he just, as a friend, was showing him the cut of the film, and he was having trouble editing it and getting that final cut.
I mean, it's hard.
Ellis, and Schrader were all arguing about it.
I mean, it seems like it's a very difficult film to put together. It just, the end result's incredibly messy. And the thing is with Soderbergh is that he can shoot and he can fucking edit and he can just get things done really, 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 really fast. And he's made plenty of films just like this one. And they look infinitely more interesting. But in terms of like their content and stuff, I mean, I'd say like stuff like The Girlfriend Experience, and he did a film called Full Frontal. Like a lot of these like low end films that he makes, because he makes a lot of kind of very low budget movies as well, on top of the other, you know, his fucking ocean movies, all that sort of crap.
Yeah.
Like he can fire them out really, really fast. So that doesn't surprise me. And if he's only being a friend, I mean, to be honest, I'd be like, just fucking take it. Soderbergh wouldn't even use his real name anyway. Would have been a pseudonym. Would have been like his father's name and his mother's maiden name.
I want to see the Soderbergh cut. I'd be interested to see what that would look like.
No, no. I don't want to see the Soderbergh. No.
You just don't want to watch this movie again?
No, I don't want to see the movie again. Soderbergh should have shot it. It would have looked, it would have looked so much better. It probably would have done it for free.
We haven't really said a lot about James Dean, but I just want to say towards the end of this episode that James Dean's got problems and no one's going to see him work again probably because of all of the sexual misconduct and rape allegations from 2015 to probably still happening now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think you knew about that, right?
I mean, I was seeing a lot of it. I don't tend, like, yeah, no, because it is fucking really terrible. You know, the whole industry in general. I mean, it's all fucked up.
So, Ryan, what is your rating for this film?
One.
What is your rating for the penis scenes?
Four.
Okay. Wow. There we go. I'm going to give this movie 3. I think it is watchable. I think Lindsay Lohan is really fun to watch because you get to actually see her doing an adult role. And I don't mean adult in the sexy way, but it's also that. But, I mean, this film's not sexy. It's not what I mean. But you kind of get to see her spread her wings a little bit. And you do see a lot of her trauma kind of pushing through. And I'm a big Lindsay Lohan fan. I'm a, what do they call her, Lilo? I'm a Lilo fan.
Okay.
I like her. But yeah, I think it's watchable. I don't think it's a terrible way to spend 90 minutes. You probably won't watch it again. Unfortunately, I've watched it twice this year, but that's okay. That's fine. I'll give it 3. For the dick scenes, 5 stars. Fully visible. You get a sense of the male nudity in this film. And there's equal male nudity, almost. Almost equal male nudity, which is cool.
Yeah. I would say that contextually and obviously visibility-wise, it's all kind of there.
Yeah.
Overall, the whole feeling of the movie, and I guess like this is a very deliberate thing, it's very scummy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very kind of dirty.
How often do you see an LA film, though, that's not gross? Of your Hollywoods? No?
You
can have your glitz and glam.
It's hard.
I think a lot of times when...
I don't know, Last Action Hero?
Yeah, that movie's awesome.
Yeah, it's LA looks amazing in that movie. because it's the movie inside the movie, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's when like LA looks amazing in that movie, and then they come to New York.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like...
New York in the 90s.
I just shot a man!
And nobody cares.
Yeah, and it's like, okay... That's fine.
That movie gets not enough credit.
Take his shoes. I'd rather watch that movie, honestly. I mean, that film is fucking... That's a fucking classic in comparison.
Ryan, would you recommend this movie?
No, it's a complete waste of your time.
Okay, I would recommend it.
I mean, that's fine.
For the ones, you know, watch it. Why not? What else are you doing? Especially if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already watched it. Good for you.
Yeah, good for you. Well done. You're in the same shitty boat that we're in right now.
This is a lovely boat, and it's afloat, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a boat that's also occupied by James Dean and Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not a fun boat.
No. I didn't say it was fun.
No.
It's not a fun movie.
No, I'd rather it was like that film Bait that they wanted to make. I'm about to throw some chum in the water and jump in.
I want that shark movie so bad.
Yeah, well,
so awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd rather do that,
okay,
than do that. I mean, I think that film sounds fucking interesting, and I have no idea how they got to this. I haven't got a clue.
I mean, I explained it already.
Still don't understand it. Still, I am very confused. I am angry.
Coming to you from the parking garage at Amoeba Music, I have been Laura.
I'm just going to put the canyons back on again for when I go to bed because it will immediately put me to sleep.
You know what I didn't get to say? I didn't get to say, nod for me, baby. Nod for me, baby. Nod for me, baby.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, nod for this.
Thank you guys for being here for part 3 of Schraderthon 2022. We'll see you for part 4.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to part 4 because
it has to tell you what it is.
Has to be better than this.
Let me think of, is it?
Is it better than this?
Oh, it is better. Oh, yeah. It's much better than this one. I'm stoked about that one.
Fuck.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a fucking good film. Thank Christ. Yeah, fuck.
And it's a rough dick scene, but that's a good movie.
Yeah. Oh, he is. He is.
See you next time.
So angry.